Une fois. Non. I also can't. That still happens. But they just changed the name to power shedding, load shedding.
No, that's different. This is for 10 days non-stop. Because the war was going on, East Pakistan,
yeah.
Bangladesh war.
Yeah, 1970 or so.
Yes.
But now everybody has a mobile, and at that time, in those days they didn't have that.
No. And somehow life went on. There's an old, there's one, maybe you don't know, there's a Chinese sage named Confucius. They call him Kung Fuzi. And he wasn't exactly a spiritual sage. He was a little bit more like Chanakya Pandit. He was expert at he was an organizer of government and ritual and things like that. And he said that I would make, if I was, he never wanted to be king, but he would advise the rulers. That's what his desire was. So he said that if I was advising a ruler, the people would be so satisfied that the people of one village would be so close to the people of another village that they could hear the dogs barking, but they would never have been there. So that's such a foreign thought for the way people think nowadays. It sounds like a torture almost, that you can't travel and run around. But even Prabhupada said this on more than one occasion, all the traveling and running around, it's just the restlessness of people's minds, which basically means the dissatisfaction of their minds. So the people of the village, he was saying, would be so peaceful that they wouldn't have to think of going anywhere else to satisfy their desires, because basically their desires were so simple. So that's a different age, thousands of years ago.
No, not even thousands.
No, Confucius. Yeah. Now instead of Confucius, it's confusion. So, Lord Krishna has been circumambulated by the amazed lizard who turned into the great king Riga, or to a demigod by the touch of Krishna's hands, and he was amazed because he couldn't understand how this could have happened to him, that he had the great fortune of being face to face with the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And the conclusion is that this happened to him not by his charity, in the sense that he gave away so many cows to thousands and thousands of cows. Do you remember the example that was used to describe how many cows he had given away in charity? Does anyone remember? Compared to the
sand particles
and raindrops and stars in the sky. In other words, he had given away unlimited cows, but that process of charity ended up causing him trouble, because in this material world, there is nothing that one can do that is fully pure in activity. So what the cause of his seeing Krishna was something more wonderful. It was the blessing of a Vaishnava sage who was pleased with him for his charity. So he was amazed, what have I done to get this topmost of fortunes raining down upon me that I've seen. I'm face to face with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What could one do to actually get that? And the truth is, there's nothing that one can do to get that much fortune. We sometimes think, I've done so much service, I've done this service, I've done that service, but there is no amount of service that we can do that can get us this great fortune, especially since the service that is performed tends to be have some jnana karma. It should be often, instead of anyabhilasita sunyam, it's anyabhilasita purnam. I have so many desires attached to the desire to perform devotional service, so it's not actually that kind of devotional service that's mixed. Jiva Goswami spends a lot of time describing this in Bhakti Sandarbha, that it is only Shuddha Bhakti that brings the result of prema. That is the Abhideya Tattva. And especially if that Shuddha Bhakti is motivated by the natural and spontaneous desire, the taste. If it's motivated by taste, the natural desire to see Krishna, to be with Krishna, to please Krishna, the natural attraction to Krishna, especially that is the Abhideya Tattva. So, amazingly enough, this great demigod who was King Riga, who was a lizard, we're hearing about three different births, practically speaking, that he took. Also in the 34th chapter of the 10th canto, where the pastimes, there's two pastimes in that chapter, the pastimes of Shankarachuda, when Krishna kills him in the Holika festival, and the pastime of the Vidyadhara, who tried to swallow Nanda Maharaj. And both of them, they had to change their bodies to advance further. Very interesting, actually, because the reason why the Vidyadhara had achieved the body of a snake was because he was cursed due to his pride. So pride is very much at the root of the problems that one has. Pride causes the next quality, that Sankarachuda. Because the Vidyadhara was proud of his beauty, and he saw his sage and he laughed, and then suddenly he was more crooked than the sage, Astavakra, who only had 8 bends in his body, but he became a snake which is just continuously bending and bending and bending with no legs, because the snake is so envious and he wanted to eat up the body. He wanted to eat Nanda Maharaj. He came in from the forest and went specifically to Nanda Maharaj and tried to eat him, to swallow him. And no matter what anyone did, they were beating him with logs, burning logs. There were guards around and they were beating. And he wouldn't give up his intent to swallow Nanda Maharaj. And then Krishna, as he came, because they were calling Krishna, 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 which is a good thing to do when there is difficulty, is to call Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And they called Krishna, 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 and then Krishna came to rescue Nanda Maharaj, and just inadvertently, he touched, while he was going towards Nanda Maharaj, he touched the serpent with his lotus feet, and immediately the serpent gave up his body. And even in that life, he gave up his body and became a Vidyadhara, who also circumambulated Nanda Maharaj as King Riga, Krishna as King Riga did, before going back to his position as a Vidyadhara. And then Sankarachuda, he had to give up his body too, but he gave up his body In a different way, he had to die, but he was purified. But he was so envious of Krishna because pride and envy are so connected. Because if we look at what Sankarsuta did, we can see, although it's mentioned that he was envious, and what was his envy? He thought, why should all these young girls be dancing on the Holika night with Krishna? Rather, they should be dancing with me. So this is incredible pride. And from that pride springs envy. I'm so wonderful, everyone should be dancing with me. No one else should be getting the facility for this enjoyment but me. So pride and envy are so connected. When we're proud, and the conditioned soul must be proud. Pride is, and envy are both born out of false ego. It must come. And therefore the cure that is almost synonymous, almost exactly the same as prema, is humility. Sanatana Goswami describes this. The humility is exactly the same as prema, but it's spiritual. Humility is different than always thinking of how bad you are, because that's just thinking about yourself all the time. But humility is taking shelter of Krishna when one sees how tiny one is and insignificant one is and how powerless one is in this world. And in illusion we now think that we have some power, and we go about our days thinking, I'm doing this and I'm doing that and I'm going to get this and I'm going to turn the key to start my car and the car's going to start. And we think that it is us who's doing it. We forget that all we're doing is this little thing. And also, if Krishna stops us, doesn't give us power, we can't even turn the key of the car. There was one Mataji in Vrindavan who was very close to leaving her body. Name of Acha Vigraha Mataji. Did you meet her at that time? Did you know her? No. She was from South Africa, a famous artist. And her husband had died, wasn't a devotee, years before that, before she became interested in Krishna consciousness. And then I remember she told me that if you just touch her body like this, as lightly as that, there was incredible pain. And she said, when my husband was dying, he told me that, and I couldn't understand it then. But now I understand it. So, if we can't even turn the key of the car, there could be too much pain. She had no strength, of course. So, we think we're doing this and we're doing that, and we forget that the Purusha Para, the Hismin Purusha Para, who is the Anumanta, the permitter, he is the one who sanctions everything that we do. And if the sanction is removed, if he doesn't give permission, we have nothing. We have nothing, we can do nothing. So an intelligent person, he realizes his complete dependence on Krishna. And that realization of the complete dependence on Krishna is called humility. And the person who is not as intelligent, he becomes proud, thinking, I'm doing so many things. Kartaham iti manyate. This is bewildered by false ego. Ahankara vamudhatma. Kartaham. Bewildered by false ego. I'm doing so many things. Forgetting his dependence on Krishna. Forgetting any gratitude towards Krishna. And just thinking, I am doing everything. And then one day, the great surprise occurs that he realizes that it's time to go and there's nothing he can do about it. So this Sankarsuta, because he was He had a connection with Kuvera. And Kuvera is so wealthy. So this caused him pride. This exacerbation, enlargement of the false ego. Because after all, how can a soul that's 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size be proud? He's so small, how could he be proud? So what happens is there's due to false ego, we have an enlarged conception of ourself, of who we are and what our capacity is. So when a person isn't in that kind of illusion, he thinks he wants to control so much, and he can't. So an intelligent person depends on Krishna, and that is called humility. So the Sankatsuda wasn't at all humble. He thought, why should all these, he went into the holy festival, what is it called, at Ratna, around Govardhan, this took place. And there's one little area of Govardhan that's famous for this. And he tried to take all the gopis away from Krishna, and they called out for Krishna to help. And Krishna picked up Krishna Balaram, immediately started chasing him. And he left the gopis and went farther up, I think it was the north or something, towards the north. And Krishna followed him. And he left the gopis in the care of Balaram, and then Krishna smashed him and killed him. Krishna just didn't let him go. So his pride was finished, and he had some kind of a kansa, jewel. And Krishna followed him, and he wanted that. So when he got it, after killing the Sankatsuda, this was the cause of his pride. One of the causes of his pride, he had some wealth, he had some, and this is actually said, nothing causes more. Where was that? Where did we read that recently? That nothing causes more. What anartha wealth doesn't cause? That was the actual statement, but I can't remember where it was, probably from something earlier. So Krishna took that and he gave it to Balaram. And Balaram gave it to, Krishna Chakravarti Thakur explains, gave it to Madhu Mangal, because he knew Krishna's intention, because Krishna couldn't directly give it to Srimati Radharani, but he wanted to. So he gave it to Balaram. Balaram gave it to Madhu Mangal, and Madhu Mangal presented it to Srimati Radharani. It's true. Wonderful jewel. So he had to leave his body because of his pride. And this King Riga, by the touch of Krishna's feet, and Vidyadhara had to change his body. And he changed it within one life. Sankatsuda had to give up his life. And King Riga, by the hand of Krishna, because of his desire, he had just made an innocent mistake, and by Krishna's desire and by the blessing of that Vaishnava sadhu, he got to see Krishna. And then it was time for him to go. He circumambulated Krishna, and he boarded a wonderful celestial aeroplane, a heavenly aeroplane, as all the people present looked on. So then Krishna is going to instruct. He was with the Yadu princes there, Raj Kumar. So then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, who is especially devoted to the Brahmins and who embodies the essence of religion, then spoke to his personal associates and thus instructed the royal class in general. So he gave them a warning. Krishna said, "How indigestible is the property of a Brahmana. Even when enjoyed just slightly, and by one more potent than fire, no matter who you are. What to speak of kings who try to enjoy it, presuming themselves lords? I do not consider halahala to be real poison, because it has an antidote, something you can do to counteract it. But a Brahmin's property, when stolen, can truly be called poison, for it has no antidote in this world. That's suffering. It kills one." So Prabhupada actually told this story when, at one point, the when the land, Krishna Balaram land, was given to Prabhupada, and then the people decided that they wanted to take the front part of it, the roadside, which is now has been taken away when the road has been expanded. Will you go and see?
Not this time.
Oh. So Prabhupada, very in the early in the morning, he called Satsarupmaji, and he started telling him the story and telling him to write down the story, because the people had given the land, and now they wanted a part of it back. They wanted to make a petrol station in the front. Yeah. There's something they call buyer's remorse. You ever hear that expression? Buyer's remorse. Did you ever hear that? It means you buy something on an impulse. You buy something, and as soon as you buy it, you think, "Oh no, I should have bought this one instead. I should have bought that one instead. I should." So people who tend towards buyer's remorse, they should stop at Big W, because they allow you to return it. But so this was charity givers' remorse. So at least let me get something out of it. So at least I should have something for a petrol station. So Prabhupada had Satsarupmaraj dictate a letter where he told these people the story of King Riga, and be careful about taking the property that's been given, because when you give something, it's not yours anymore. That's the proper mood. But in our mind, what happens is we give something, but we remain attached to it, thinking that it's still ours, because the attachment lives in the mind. Even more than on the physical level, it lives in the mind. So beware, he's telling the kings, don't think yourself a lord or anyone. I do not consider halhala to be real poison, because it has an antidote, but a Brahmin's property, when stolen, can truly be called poison, for it has no antidote in this world. Poison kills only the person who ingests it, takes it. And an ordinary fire may be extinguished with water. But the fire generated from the kindling wood of a Brahmin's property burns the thief's entire family down to the root. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti compares the fire ignited by stealing a Brahmin's property to the fire that blazes within the cavity, the hole of an old tree. Such a fire cannot be put out even with the water of numerous rainfalls, because it's gone deep into the tree. Rather, it burns the whole tree from within, all the way down to the roots in the ground. Similarly, the fire ignited by stealing a Brahmana's property is the most deadly and should be avoided at all costs. Let's see how Prabhupada describes this in the Christian book. At this time, after the king left, Lord Krishna was present amongst his relatives who were members of the Kshatriya class. To teach them through the exemplary character of King Riga, he said, "Even though a Kshatriya king may be as powerful as fire, it is not possible for him to steal the property of a Brahmana and utilize it for his own purpose. If this is so, how can ordinary kings who falsely think themselves the most powerful beings within the material world usurp a Brahmana's property?" Steal. "I do not think that taking poison is as dangerous as taking a Brahmin's property. For ordinary poison, there is a treatment. One can be relieved from its effects. But if one drinks the poison of taking a Brahmin's property, there is no remedy for the mistake. A perfect example is King Riga. He was very powerful and very pious, but due to the small mistake of unknowingly taking a Brahmin's cow, he was condemned to the abominable, terrible life of a lizard. Ordinary poison affects only those who drink it, and ordinary fire can be extinguished simply by pouring water on it, but an Arani fire ignited by the spiritual potency of a Brahmana who is dissatisfied can burn to ashes the whole family of a person who provokes such a Brahmana." Prabhupada also says, parenthetically, "Formerly the Brahmana is used to ignite the fire of sacrifice not with matches or any other external fire, but with their powerful mantras called Arani." The wood was Arani. "If someone even touches a Brahmin's property, his family is ruined for 3 generations. However, if a Brahmin's property is forcibly taken away, the taker's family for 10 generations before him and 10 generations after will be subject to ruination. On the other hand, if someone becomes a pure Vaishnava or devotee of the Lord, 10 generations of his family before his birth and 10 generations after will be liberated." So on one hand, we see what happened to the king when he was blessed by a Brahmin Vaishnava sadhu. He saw Krishna. And on the other hand, we see what happens if one gets such a person angry and by this process of stealing his goods, such devastation occurs. So Krishna was telling all kings, through telling the members of his own family, that there's a saying that the mother instructs the daughter-in-law by instructing her daughter. You know, you've heard that one before. Then we see practically it's done. So he's talking to the boys because to tell them to be careful, but actually it's interesting that they weren't careful, not careful enough, because due to the pastime potency of Krishna, later on, described in the second chapter of the 11th canto, how the Yadu princes went and they teased Samba and others, they teased the sages who had gathered to perform sacrifices. And they dressed Samba because Samba was very beautiful. Who was Samba's mother, do you know?
Yamavati,
the second wife of Krishna. And they dressed him up as a girl and they put something in belly, making believe that she was pregnant. And they said, "Oh, sages, you know everything." They started to tease them, make fun of them. "Will she give birth? Will this beautiful girl give birth to a boy or a girl child?" And they were just teasing the sages. And the sages became angry because they did know. And they said, "She will give birth to a lump of iron that will destroy the Yadu dynasty." And they were shocked. So they didn't quite learn the lesson on how to deal with Brahmins. They were shocked and they were so frightened that they wouldn't even tell Krishna of the mistake they had made. They went right to Ugrasena, and Ugrasena said, "Don't worry, boys, it's all right." So he took, because they had, and then they removed the cloth, and it was actually an iron club there. So they were really shocked. So Ugrasena took that and ground it up into powder. And because when you're grinding, you have to be sanding it down. You're holding on to a piece, and that last piece you can't get. So they threw it all into the ocean, and this all became the immediate cause of the fighting of the Yadu dynasty, beating each other, and the final piece in the iron became fixed to the arrowhead of what was his name? That started with a J. And the one who shot the arrow, who was Bhrigu Muni, an incarnation of Bhrigu Muni. Anyway. So Lord Krishna continued, if some foolish king who is puffed up by his wealth, prestige, and power, and these things tend to make us proud, want to steal a Brahmin's property, he should be understood to be clearing his path to hell. He does not know how much he has to suffer for such an unwise act. Who else stole a Brahmin's property from the Bhagavatam? You know?
From
He had a son. Well, who was the one whose son?
The incarnation.
Yeah, Parsaram. And his father's name was? Jamadagni. And who was the one who stole? Maybe it was Kartavirya Arjuna? Maybe. And he was so powerful that he had captured Ravana. Ravan. He was destroyed. And he was so upset that he destroyed all the jatis. So Krishna continues, if someone takes away the property of a very liberal brahmana who is encumbered by a large dependent family, then such an usurper is put into the hell known as Kumbhipak. Not only is he put into this hell, but his family members also have to accept such a miserable condition of life. So the ones who you're trying to help, you become the cause of their suffering, and you're trying to help them. So it's such a heavy thing. A person who takes away a Brahmin's property, whether it is originally given by him or by someone else, is condemned to live at least for 60,000 years as a miserable insect and stool. Therefore, I instruct you, all my boys and relatives that are present here, do not, even by mistake, take the possession of a brahmana and therefore the possessions of a brahmana and thereby pollute your whole family. If someone even wishes to possess such property, let alone to take it away by force, the duration of his life is reduced. Oh, so heavy. He will be defeated by his enemies, and after being bereft of his royal position, when he gives up his body, he'll become a serpent, giving trouble to all other living entities. My dear boys and relatives, I therefore advise you that even if a brahmana becomes angry with you and calls you by ill names or curses you, still you should not retaliate. On the contrary, you should smile, tolerate him, and offer your respects to the brahmana. You know very well that even I myself offer my obeisances to the Brahmins with great respect, 3 times daily. You should therefore follow my instructions and example. I shall not forgive anyone who does not follow them, and I shall punish him. You should learn from the example of King Riga that even if someone unknowingly usurps, steals the property of a brahmana, he is put into a miserable condition of life. Thus Lord Krishna, who was always engaged in purifying the conditioned living entities, gave instructions not only to his family members and the inhabitants of Dwarka, but to all the members of human society. And after this, the Lord entered his palace. That's in the Bhaktivedanta purports in the 64th chapter of Krishna, the story of King Riga. Let's hear continue the verses itself. If a person enjoys a Brahmin's property without receiving due permission, that property destroys three generations, oneself, one's sons, and one's grandsons. Sri Goswami says, three generations of his family. But if he takes it by force, or gets the government or other outsiders to help him steal it, then 10 generations of his ancestors and 10 generations of his descendants are all destroyed. Members of the royal order, blinded by royal opulence, failed to foresee their own downfall. Childishly hankering to enjoy a Brahmin's property, they are actually hankering to go to hell. For as many years as there are particles of dust touched by the tears of generous Brahmins who have dependent families and whose property is stolen, uncontrolled kings who steal a Brahmin's property are cooked along with their families in the hell known as Kumbhipak. Whether it be his own gift or someone else's, a person who steals a Brahmin's property, that means that even if he gives the gift himself, or someone else has given the gift to a Brahmin, a person who steals a Brahmin's property will take his birth as a worm in feces stool for 60,000 years. I do not desire Brahmin's wealth. Those who lust after it become short-lived and are defeated. They lose their kingdoms and become snakes who trouble others. My dear followers, never treat a learned Brahmin harshly, even if he has sinned, even if he deserves it. Even if he attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you, always continue to offer him obeisances. Just as I always carefully bow down to Brahmanas, so all of you should likewise bow down to them. I will punish anyone who acts otherwise. When a Brahmin's property is stolen, even unknowingly, it certainly causes the person who takes it to fall down, just as a Brahmin's cow did to Nriga. Having thus instructed the residents of Dwarka, Lord Mukunda, purifier of all worlds, entered his palace. Let's see if there's anything that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that hasn't been mentioned. The property of a Brahmana being enjoyed even a little by theft or other means is indigestible even for a person powerful as fire due to his great austerities and mystic perfections. It is like undigestible food. If it is like undigestible food, it cannot be as severe as actual poison. Krishna said, Shiva, but Shiva could digest the hala hala poison, so it was not real poison. But there is no antidote for stealing from a Brahmana. Krishna says, poison kills only the person who ingests it. Ordinary fire may be extinguished with water, but the fire generated from the kindling wood of a Brahmin's property burns the thief's entire family to the ground. Krishna said, even taking poison is preferable to taking a Brahmin's property, because poison only destroys the drinker. Can a Brahmin's property be compared to fire in terms of his killing a conditioned soul by placing him in the cycle of birth and death? Krishna answers, a fire leaves the roots of a tree intact, but the fire whose kindling wood is a Brahmin's property is a special kind of fire since it cannot be extinguished. It is like the fire burning within the cavity of an old tree, which in the course of time grows to a great size and cannot be put out even with the water of numerous rainfalls. Rather, it burns the whole tree from within, all the way down to the roots. Similarly, the fire ignited by stealing a Brahmin's property is the most deadly because it burns one's family to the root. My friend and helper, without my giving it, is enjoying my wealth. Therefore, let him enjoy it. This is the meaning of not receiving permission. Enjoying in this way destroys oneself, one's sons, and one's grandsons. If one enjoys by force, or the influence of the king, then 10 generations in the past and future will suffer. Those who desire a Brahmin's property for themselves also desire hell. They're foolish, not seeing their own downfall. But Krishna's followers may question, if a Brahmana steals our property or is inimical without cause, what is to be done? Krishna answers in 2 verses, all my followers, I'm instructing everyone who is my devotee, not just you. Otherwise persons should no longer think of themselves as otherwise such persons should no longer think of themselves as my followers. So Krishna's instructions were, never treat a learned Brahmana harshly, even if he has sinned. Even if he attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you, always continue to offer him obeisances. Just as I always carefully bow down to Brahmins, so all of you should likewise bow down to them. I will punish anyone who acts otherwise. And then he gives the example of King Riga. When a Brahmin's property is stolen, even unknowingly, it certainly causes the person who takes it to fall down, just as the Brahmin's cow did to Riga. Vishwanath says, this is not an exaggeration to instill fear. There is direct proof as stated in this verse. So very heavy.
You know the Brahmin?
No.
We have to be careful.
Hello, someone.
Saying that you can believe everything a Vaishnava says except when he speaks about himself. Okay. Any questions or comments?
Go Brahmana Nikashi. Different terms.
Very heavy. Too heavy.
I recall the same thing when Kats Brahmins these days in Kali Yuga. It's pretty applicable. This sort of heavy punishment.
One could, if one reads what Prabhupada has said on these things, we could see that he's talking about Brahmins by qualification, not just by birth.
Yeah, there he mentioned when you read. There's a Brahmana, they used to ignite the fire. So that quality is missed.
Yeah, there's an interesting topic. This also comes up in when the four Kumaras, Krishna glorifies the Brahmins there too. Yeah.
Anyways, it's better to be a safe side. In Kali Yuga, whatever, for a Vishnu devotee, we should be careful with any soul.
Yeah. Don't offend anyone. Okay, good night. Tomorrow, the topic will change. Change to Balaram, go to Vrindavan.
You
share it.
I think he takes his carrot. There was no Dwarka Mathura Express train. Huh?
Radharani Express.
Now they charge for that. Before that.